Hanif, do you think of yourself more as a writer and poet or as a Timberwolves fan?
Oh, certainly a Timberwolves fan. I was a Timberwolves fan before I wrote anything, before I aspired to write anything. So I think my primary identity is that of a Timberwolves fan.
It feels like poets and, dare I include, rappers seem to have a natural connection to the game of hoops. Why do you think that is?
Well, there's a type of lyricism in the game that I think can be easily mapped onto, say, Steph Curry hunting for a sliver of light through a screen, or the very kind of intimate nature, although one can argue that not much of this kind of defense is played in the league anymore, but the very intimate nature of a one-on-one, a defender and a ball handler kind of locked into a dance with each other, trying to see which one opens up their body in one direction first. There's a lot of lyricism and beauty and metaphor to be found in the game, at least when it is played a certain way.
One of the teams playing in a pretty lyrical way right now are the Minnesota Timberwolves. They're one of the NBA's top contenders, battling for the number one seed in the West. Today, we turn our attention toward them with Hanif Abdurraqib, a poet, writer, and critic whose book about basketball and ascension comes out this month. As a lifelong Timberwolves fan and astute observer of sports and culture, he takes us through the story of how the T-Wolves got to this moment, how his relationship with the team shaped his life, and where they could go from here. I'm Clinton Yates. It's Friday, March 8th. This is ESPN Daily. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Let's go back to the beginning here. How is it that someone that was raised in Columbus, Ohio in the 90s becomes a diehard T-Wolves guy?
Well, there were really no other options for me, which is a funny thing to say, but my family is mostly from New York, and so I grew up in a house with Knicks fans in the 90s. My mother loved Charles Smith, and my brother loved John Starks, and that meant that the Pacers were the enemy, and the Bulls were certainly the enemy, and the Cavs were not bad, but also sort of inconsequential. Now, my first exposure to basketball fandom was actually the Columbus Quest, which was an ABL team, women's basketball team, that existed right before the WNBA kind of took off. Around the same time the Columbus Quest was rising, they won the only championships in the ABL's history, by the way.
The season is hard fought. The Columbus Quest are well loved. They have definitely won the hearts of Central Ohio, that's for sure. There's no question about the way this community has started to rally around.
Around the time they were ascending, Kevin Garnett came into the league. And given that we were in the Midwest, and in the Midwest at that time, if you didn't have cable, you could still kind of get all the Midwestern teams' games kind of piped into you just through basic television. So we could watch Pacers games, of course, on WGN. We could watch all the Bulls games, Pistons games, Cavs games. And then the Timberwolves, when they got Kevin Garnett, those games became more widely accessible because they were a bit of a fascination. This team that was brand new, that had this kid who came straight out of high school. And I was kind of locked in on that. I thought, I am a basketball fan in search of a team. And this team kind of emerged from the woods of the upper Midwest. And these are going to be my guys. I didn't know what I was getting into. I was very young, but I thought, you know, I'll get to grow with this team. And surely they'll just grow into this kind of dynasty. There'll be many eras and many victories.
I went to college in Ohio. I've heard a lot about a lot of different teams, both pro and sort of side and college. The Quest are not one that I've heard brought up a lot. What building do they even play in?
They used to play in the Convention Center. Wow. They used to play in the Columbus Convention Center in downtown Columbus, Ohio. And the games were You could get into the games for pretty much nothing. And then when the WNBA became prominent and wiped out the ABL, that whole team, ironically perhaps, migrated to Minnesota. They became the Lynx pretty much, even including the coach, Brian Agler, coached the Lynx early on. And so
how about that?
You know, there are people in Columbus who held a bitterness for a while that Minnesota stole their very successful. I mean, really, the first successful team that we had in the city was the Quest. And then Minnesota took them away from us. And as an exchange, I stole an affection for the Timberwolves.
Well, I'm assuming that your journey through life has granted you more access than a lot of situations than your average Joe. But working on this story for ESPN, it gave you a chance to get into the locker room in front of the players. What was that experience like as a lifelong fan of this team?
It was interesting. I mean, I'm very good at kind of putting aside my personal affections and excitements and kind of locking into the work of someone on a mission to do a very specific job. But it was also kind of cool to be, you know, I go to about anywhere between 6 to 8 Timberwolves games a year and have for a while. My seats have gotten a bit better as of late, which is nice. But I'd never been in the kind of like basement of the Target Center, the locker rooms and all that. And it was kind of cool to see the level of camaraderie that this team has, which is evident on the court, I think, very evident on the court. It's not a performance, or, you know, it's not something that the bench is kind of overexcited and doing for the cameras. These guys are really locked into each other in a way that has not ever been present to my eye with any Timberwolves teams, even the great ones. I mean, if we could call the 02 team great, I mean, probably the greatest team that has been, you know, those 02, 03, 04 teams. There's a real camaraderie that shines through. And so that was wonderful to see. And it's also just kind of surreal and strange as a fan to be reporting on a team that you are a fan of now in the midst of a resurgence, but a resurgence with a very real clock on it, I think. This Timberwolves team has a very real timeline that they're operating in. And so there's a real urgency to the pleasure in the kind of awe that comes with being witness to them and kind of being in the locker room. They don't seem to be thinking about time. They're thinking about the right now. And it was really cool, I think, to see this team pivot from it would be nice to win a playoff series to we are trying to win a championship.
You mentioned Kevin Garnett before. He's sort of everybody's starting point when you think about the history of the Timberwolves. And he was the engine behind that 03-04 team and that run that you mentioned. He's the only one in franchise history to get past the first round. And his run in Minnesota, as you mentioned, it collides with your formative years as a fan. What does Garnett mean to you personally? And what do those teams mean to who you are as a sports fan and a hoops fan?
Oh, gosh, I love those teams. I loved those Timberwolves teams because of how they fought. They always seemed, even when in KG's MVP year, when that was probably the greatest team that they had, they still seemed undermatched and kind of like underdogs in a way. And I was driven to a hatred for Tim Duncan, even though I broadly like Tim Duncan a lot. I respect him massively as a player, but I was driven to a distaste for the Kings. All those teams that were kind of, you know, certain roadblocks in those early 2000s, those early 2000s teams. But I loved KG because he was up for every fight in front of him. And on top of that, there was a real palpable energy that came with it. I mean, it's hard to drag a team largely on your own to the heights that he was able to drag Minnesota to. Obviously, you know, Sprewell and Cassell were great. But I think, to be honest about, if one were to go back and actually look at the literal makeup of those teams, you know, Sprewell was not what he was. And the bench was really thin. And so, you know, Kevin Garnett, to me, spoiled Minnesota fans, I think, because some Minnesota fans, myself included, have spent a lot of our post-Kevin Garnett years wondering why the single talented guy can't just drag a flawed roster to at least the playoffs. Flawed roster makeup, flawed front offices, flawed draft picks, all of it. I think it's been a bit unfair on some of the stars who have come after.
So let's do a little thought exercise here. Round out the rest of your medal stand in Timberwolves history. Who are the names and faces that dot your memory when you think about the team you grew up loving?
I loved Pooh Richardson. I really loved Pooh Richardson.
Let's go.
Yeah, the little left-handed baby who tips it away. Outlet to Richardson. 3-on-3. Boop shakes it. Makes what a pass. Kicks it out to Mitchell. Count it. As long as Poo keeps this up, Ron, he's getting down in that lane. And when he kicks out, they must knock down the open set.
Now the big this is incredible. Very underrated point guard. If I'm thinking about my all-time Timberwolves team, I don't think most people would have Poo Richardson as their starting point guard. I think people would maybe lean Marbury or even Rubio. But I love Doug West. I really liked Tom Gugliotta.
Good.
You know, he was the kind of like the one of the original Wolves who was kind of just like battle fighting for his life. I, you know, my relationship with the Cavs is such that I did not grow up loving the Cavs, but I did grow up loving Terrell Brandon a lot. And so when he joined the Timberwolves, he did not necessarily, in terms of my favorite Timberwolves point guards, he's not going to supplant Poo, but he's second on that list. But also, you know, I have a lot of affection for Karl-Anthony Towns, who I think has battled through not only people, of course, tend to talk about his personal losses, and he just suffered another personal loss recently, but just on the floor, he's, you know, fought through a lot of different head coaches, a lot of different rosters, a lot of different front offices that have forced him to adjust his game time and time and time again, to the point where it is almost impossible, I think, to see the kind of player he can be.
This has been his best season. Hopefully his return from this meniscus injury can continue that form.
And the kind of scrutiny he's been under feels a bit, to me, unfair because of the adjustments he's had to make. And he's having maybe the best season of his career, one of the best seasons of his career right now. And it's kind of good to see the fan base especially really come around on that.
One of the questions I always ask about people and their favorite squads, because I'm a uniform guy, not just from a fashion standpoint, but a sort of connectivity to the soil of the fan base. What's your favorite uniform that the Timberwolves have ever worn?
There are two that I'm tied for. One, they didn't wear this one a lot, but the white Prince City Edition ones, they always wore the black ones. The black ones, I think, are the bigger hit, but they have white ones that are white and purple. And I think they maybe only wore them like four times, but I love those. And I love the old kind of black, not old, but, you know, the early 2000s, mid-2000s, the black Timberwolves with the trees in the collar. They don't have a history of great jerseys. I do like the ones that they're wearing now, the kind of throwbacks from the original team, the white. Those are good. I think the white jerseys for the Wolves have always worked a bit better than the, because the blue is a little strange, and the black, other than that black one that I love, a lot of the black ones have been just really over-designed. And the City Edition ones from a couple years ago were maybe one of the worst that I've ever seen, with the like color blocks on them.
Fun fact, a young Clinton Yates had that OG throwback that they wear these days. It wasn't in white, it was in blue, and it was of Isaiah Rider. Coming up,
Isaiah Rider.
After years of disappointment, we will find out what it's like for Hanif to be a fan of this Timberwolves team right now. Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. In a city that's gotten pretty used to mediocrity, this fan base seems to have accepted this team as a legitimate contender and have rallied around them. How important do you think that support has been to not just the squad, but the culture overall?
Oh, it's been incredible. To get to go to Minnesota games, the first time I felt a real palpable shift, I was at Target Center for the playoffs a couple years back when they had that fateful series against Memphis. But I was at Target Center when they won. I think it was game four where they won and Kat hit the game-winning free throws.
It's Towns. Five on the clock. Driving on Collins. On the attack, he's fouled on the way to the rim.
4 months away, I come back, two free throws. Don't worry about it. I got that.
And to be in the arena and outside the arena after that, I was like, this is a different city than, because I've been going to Timberwolves games for so long. And even when they would be winning, and like, I would, you know, if you go to one of the games in the Kevin Love Rubio years, they might get a win, but you walk outside Target Center and it's like, well, you know, we went from ninth place to eighth place temporarily. But after that playoff match, it was like people were in the streets, people were hanging out of cars. It felt like something. Because I wasn't going to Timberwolves games during the KG years. You know, I was just watching on TV.
Right.
It felt like something that I had only ever imagined for a basketball team I followed. And to go back this year, you know, in the piece I write about going to a game, it's right before Christmas. And there's this kind of joyful bewilderment. Every fan I talk to is in this sense of disbelief that I am also feeling, where it's like, this is incredible. It's very euphoric. It also feels almost dreamlike, as if we're witnessing something, but it isn't real. And that kind of collision leads to excitement, but an excitement with a little bit of tentativeness, which I actually think is good. I think that is good for my mode of fandom. I like being a fan who is always on the verge of a thrill, but maybe a touch tentative.
You mentioned Karl Anthony Towns as one of the guys on this current team that you love. He's been the face of the franchise since Minnesota took him number one in 2015. That draft was an interesting one. How would you describe the Cat era, Hanif?
I think it's been burdened by a lot of unfair expectation. But I also think it's really fascinating to me that anyone would want to stay through what he's had to stay through. I mean, just the shuffling of coaches and front offices. And so there's a real level of loyalty that he's shown this team, all with the hope of there will be a roster through which I and this team can be successful. And I will say this about Karl Anthony Towns, at least what he has said out loud over the years, is that he's fine sacrificing being the face of the team if it means the team wins. You know, he's maybe fine sacrificing his standing as a superstar if it means the team wins. He's fine sacrificing some of his numbers if it means the team wins. You know, all of these things that do seem to come to fruition when you watch him playing alongside and Rudy, specifically Rudy, I think. But the era itself, you know, it's been tough because some of those teams that he's played with are just not built for him. They have not built around him. They, I think, in the past have just expected him, because he can do so many things offensively, particularly on the court, I think they have just expected him to mold around whoever is there and good things will happen. But, you know, Andrew Wiggins was just horribly miscast in the role he was put in. They drafted Zach LaVine and had, I know they were trying to tank that season, but they just had him playing point guard, which I know he dabbled it at UCLA, but like Zach LaVine is not a point guard. And so at the expense of developing some of these players into the kind of players they should be and could be, which we saw happen when Wiggins went to Golden State and when Zach LaVine went to Chicago, they have not really built a team that's been able to sustain. And I think the Jimmy Butler scenario took a real hit on Karl Anthony Towns, on his confidence and on his reputation around the league. There was a stretch where I think he was being very reactionary to that in trying to prove himself as something he perhaps was not. And now it's been really great to watch him this season, because not only I think is he playing the best basketball on both ends of the floor that he's played, but there's a real level of maturity that just wasn't there. And I think for folks who have watched his career, Wolves fans, they see it. You know, for people who maybe don't watch the games, they don't see it, but there's a real level of maturity. There's a level of leadership that wasn't there, and there's a real level of sacrifice that wasn't there. There was this game, I forget what game, I think it was against the Sixers last month or a couple months ago, where it was crunch time, and Kat got an offensive rebound. Somebody missed a jump shot. Ant missed a jump shot. Kat got an offensive rebound, and a double team came to him. He was kind of right outside the painted area, and a double team came. And I, expecting Cat to do what Cat would have done in the past, was like, he's going to force up a, he's going to try to go through this double team and not do it in the smartest way, trying to draw a foul. And instead of drawing the foul, he's going to miss a layup. But, you know, he slid right through that double team, clocked that his one of the double teamers was peeling off Rudy and threw a lob to Rudy in the final seconds. I just think he's evolved. We perhaps as fans expect players to evolve at a specific pace. And sometimes it takes players a lot longer. And I think I'm just grateful for the maturity that he's finally reached. And I think it's showing this season.
Yeah, I think a lot of people looked at that Butler incident and sort of said, same old Timberwolves, can't figure it out, don't really have a leader. However, now that Rudy Gobert is there, a trade that a lot of people looked at kind of awkwardly and didn't exactly work last season, that's taken on new life this year. What do you think about the chemistry between the Frenchman and Cat?
I was very wrong about this. The day the Rudy Gobert trade happened, I was in L.A. on a way to a friend's wedding, and I had stepped out of a recording thing. I was recording something for CNN, and I had my phone like in a box. And I stepped out, and I looked at my phone, and I thought somebody had died because, you know, it was like tons of notifications. And I realized it was a Rudy Gobert trade, and I thought, well, this seems bad, just on his face. I didn't even know the details of the trade. And then I saw the details of the trade, and I thought, I'm going to have to go to therapy for this. This doesn't make sense at all. And I was skeptical. I was very dismissive of a lot of the Wolves fans who were like, it'll work, just give it a year. And I was like, well, you don't have a year. You know, this is, if a win now trade is a win now trade, that means you're winning now. But as it turns out, I was happily wrong about that. Last year had a lot of things working against it. Cat got hurt and they came into camp. They both didn't like work out in camp that much together. Rudy was coming back from playing for France and Cat was sick. Cat had that like strange illness that no one ever nailed down what it was. And then Cat got hurt. And by the time he came back, there was just no meshing of the two. What you're seeing now, I think, with them is really the ideal manifestation of a Twin Towers thing. Well, at least as ideal as it can be in this era. They're not Duncan and Robinson. They're probably not even Samson and Elijah Wan. But there is this kind of ideal Twin Tower marking that is working in this modern NBA where on offense, the spacing issues do come up from time to time a little bit, but not as much as they did last year. Cat's moving around more. He's not just standing in the corner and he's not just kind of clogging up the paint. They are actually working extremely well on defense together. There are lapses, but they communicate well. They move well. Cat has gotten much better at defending on the perimeter than he was last year. And so there's a real meshing of these two talents. You know, the Timberwolves are going to run into a problem trying to keep all these guys. So it does feel like this is a, you know, we got maybe one more year of this. And I'm excited to see what, you know, not to look too far ahead, but it seems like this pairing still has room to grow. And I'm just excited to see the end of this year and then going into next year, what they look like and what they can do.
So if Kevin Garnett is the biggest face in Timberwolves history and Karl-Anthony Towns has been the face of the franchise for the past decade, obviously, the future in Minnesota has to be Anthony Edwards.
Sure.
What have you seen him bring to the team, and what has he brought to you and the fan base in general from a hope standpoint, never mind just a basketball?
Well, it's been good to have a perimeter star player. The Timberwolves have perhaps not had a star guard. I mean, if I'm just racking my brain, I think the only all-star Timberwolves guards there have been Cassell and Wally Zerbiak a guard or a forward guard?
He's a guard for me.
Then Cassell and Zerbiak, right? And, you know, love to both of them, but neither of them are like franchise-changing talents. And so it's good to have a star perimeter player, like a massive star perimeter player. On top of that, I think his personality is enlivening. For me, I obviously am an Edwards fan, but I'm also, there are parts of his game that I do find a bit grating right now, but also I'm very accepting of the fact that he's very young. Sometimes a bit too much dribbling, you know, sometimes the shot selection is just not there. I don't really hold his feet to the fire just yet because the good plays overwhelm the ones that get on my nerves a bit. And also he's so young and I'm of an era where I watched a young Kobe Bryant. I'm not comparing Anthony Edwards to a young Kobe Bryant. I'm saying these kind of things were frustrating to Lakers fans that, you know, watching Kobe Bryant airball a bunch of jump shots in the playoffs or, you know, dribble into triple teams and turn the ball over. For me, it's a question of his maturity rate, which to me seems like it's there or it's getting there, especially on defense. I think one thing Anthony Edwards doesn't get a lot of credit for is that he really locks in on defense. And when he locks in on defense, when he chooses to, he's a really dangerous two-way player. That alone is incredibly thrilling.
Well, the reason I made a face when you mentioned Kobe is because I was going to go farther back than that, which is talking heads at this network, ESPN, have discussed Michael Jeffrey Jordan in the same breath as Ant in this regard. Perimeter player, you have a comp sort of in terms of when he got to the franchise, what they had and what they could build. What do you think of that? Not just in terms of what he could be as a ceiling, but who he is as a guy and how he might develop.
No one's ceiling is Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan is Michael Jordan. I mean, like, I don't think Anthony Edwards is Michael Jordan, and that's great. I would not want him to be burdened with the expectation of being literally Michael Jordan, or even a like facsimile of Michael Jordan. I think that he is unique in a way because his drive to win is still growing. And he's also, I think, acting in a real refusal to just kind of accept what Minnesota has been, like what the Timberwolves have been. That's the kind of player that you need more of those. It seemed like Cat was always that guy, but didn't have the ability to really enact that, but he needed someone else. Love to Andrew Wiggins, but you know, when Wiggins was there, he didn't seem like he was all that interested in acting in opposition to Minnesota's historical woes. It seems like Anthony Edwards really came in and said, this is not the Minnesota that was, is not going to be the Minnesota that is. And so there's this kind of, you know, BA before Ant and AA after Ant, so to speak. Yeah. And to me, that is not uniquely Jordan-esque, but we can say it's Jordan-esque. I also think the NBA is different. You know, Jordan had to go through the Showtime Lakers and the Bad Boy Pistons and the Celtics. The West is right now very concerning to me, but the NBA is so transient in nature now that there isn't a real opportunity to build these longstanding rivalries where Ant is going to perhaps triumph over a long-held foe, though it would be nice to see him triumph over the Nuggets, at least. But the West is concerning. I look at the West, and I think all these teams, I don't really want to see him in the playoffs.
To be clear, I don't think the Jordan comp is ridiculous. From a specific style of play standpoint to, you know, whatever it is it takes to build, you talked about having to get through certain teams. This squad has had a very different level of expectations these past couple seasons previous to, say, I don't know, 10 years ago. The happy to be here energy was major for Minnesota. The city rallied behind the team after their previously mentioned play-in win, but at what point does this narrative change for this squad officially as to where they're going?
Oof. Well, I think first you have to kind of, it's that kind of thing I mentioned earlier where the vibe in the locker room is very much, we're not trying to win a playoff series. We're trying to go to the finals. You know, we're trying to do more than just, because if I can be honest, I think the downfall of that Grizzly series I felt a couple years ago was this kind of happy to be here ethos. Listen, I'm a massive fan. When they won that play-in game, I was also in my house jumping on tables and whatnot. Like I was as excited as anyone, but it does kind of seem like they never reset. You know, they never kind of reset and said, we did that, we have to do this other thing. They won that first game in Memphis, and perhaps that might have been the worst thing that happened, because it compounded that we're just happy to be here. We're happy to be here and we did a thing and now we're off. Because the way they collapsed in that Memphis series specifically was like, oh, you're kind of outside of your bodies watching yourself achieve something while this team is not messing around at all, you know? And I think they're there. I really do. I think this team mentality-wise is Mike Conley helps. I know we didn't mention Mike Conley at all. The one thing I got talking to Mike Anori and talking to Jordan McLaughlin, talking to people, is that Mike Conley is really actually the engine of re-energizing a kind of maturity in this team that teaches them how to finish games and shows them how to finish games. You know, they had some games where Mike Conley didn't play, and these were all games where they kind of fell apart in the fourth quarter. He's just a glue person that you can have, you know, and so there's that. But also, the Western Conference is just no joke. I mean, if the Clippers stay relatively healthy, I know Russ is hurt, but if the Clippers go into the playoffs with Harden, Kawhi, and PG healthy, that's rough. That's rough. And if Oklahoma City stays relatively healthy, Oklahoma City is a nightmare matchup for Minnesota. Just absolutely nightmare matchup on every level. You know, that's not even mentioning the Nuggets. I think the Timberwolves could beat the Kings in a 7-game series, but I don't like that series. I think it goes 7 games, and I would not love that.
Last thing I'll ask you here, Hanif. The Wolves visit the Cavs tonight on ESPN. The Lakers on Sunday, again on ESPN. They face the Clippers and the Dubs this month. They've got multiple games against the Nuggets and the Suns down the stretch. You mentioned who they're a matchup nightmare against. Who would you like them to see in the potential playoff matchup? And what do you think they're actually going to do when it comes down to what the end of the season has in store?
Yeah, I would like to, you know, this might sound absurd, but I would love to see them see the Warriors in the playoffs in the first round. I think that's a matchup they can win. The Warriors is currently constructed, you know, we all love the Warriors, but I think that's a matchup they can win. I think that I would love to see them with the Kings. I think, you know, if they can kind of get, lovingly to Kings fans, I don't think the Kings are getting past the first round, but if there is some way this could shake out, where the easiest possible pass for the Timberwolves is Warriors, Kings, and then just see what happens. I would like that. I don't think that's possible. I think they're going to have to see like maybe the Mavericks in the second round, which I don't love that matchup, but I'll take it. You know, the Pelicans too. They play the Pelicans well. You know, those are good games. Those are physical games. Those are games I enjoy watching. You know, do I love the matchup? No, because, I mean, Brandon Ingram is good as it is, but against the Timberwolves, he becomes like prime Kevin Durant. If there is a path where we could get like, you know, Golden State, then Sacramento, I would love that. I would love that. But I think what's going to happen is perhaps Golden State, and then you're going to have to face down one of the harder matchups, be it Clippers, Suns, Pelicans, even the Mavericks, who I think post-trade deadline, the Mavericks are a real dangerous team. But I expect them, assuming health and once that kind of clicks, I expect them to be in the top five. I love what they did at the trade deadline, and I think it makes life harder for a lot of teams that were matching up better with them.
I'm telling y'all, if you've never seen the white, purple, rain, Timberwolves, unis, them things are ice cold. Ooh. Man,
yes.
Just like Minnesota. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you.
I'm Clinton Yates. This has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Bruce Baldwin, Ashley Brown, Bradford Craig, Andrew Hahn, Alexander Hyacinth, Ryan Nantel, Mike Philbrick, and Phoebe Untermann. Special thanks to Justin Bay and Jackson Agello. We'll talk to you Monday, kiddos.